This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your workday. So tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and myself, Tass. Macca.
Yes. Look, it's been an interesting morning, Tass, and it's going to get more interesting.
So, we've got World AIDS Day coming up, Macca.
That's right.
This is on the 1st of December.
1st of December, next Tuesday. And Associate Professor Graham Brown from the University of New South Wales, and our apologies, Graham, we call you an aspro, although Tass does, because that's an associate professor. But I think it's a nice term.
And I'm very comfortable with aspro.
There you go.
Good morning, aspro, Brown.
Good morning, aspro. Now, Graham, World AIDS Day is coming up, but, you know, just so people don't forget, you know, we have a sizable HIV, people living with HIV population in Australia, and the challenges of living with HIV in a COVID-19 world are pretty challenging.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah. It has been. And I suppose one of the things we're really looking at discussing or talking through, particularly on World AIDS Day, is the very different experiences that people with HIV have had while managing COVID and people affected by HIV and their families and friends and so forth. Obviously, there's aspects of, particularly in the early stages, many of our community, as we know, have lived through major pandemic with HIV and have a pandemic since then. But HIV had a big impact. And some of the early stages of COVID around the fear, the misinformation, or the unclear information, the concerns around communities being sort of stigmatised or targeted, things like that, really brought back a lot of memories for a lot of people. The other aspect that's particularly important is, while many people with HIV, thankfully, we're all doing much, much better with treatment, those of us who are on treatment can take treatment, the reality is a high proportion of people with HIV still experience a lot of isolation. And so COVID-19, the lockdowns, particularly in Victoria, particularly affected, people with HIV and anyone, any of the communities that are experiencing isolation going into an environment with the lockdowns and so forth, really accentuated those experiences.
I think, people, perhaps it's not been at front of mind when people are thinking about this. I wanted to ask, are people with HIV at a greater risk from COVID-19, or, you know, should they contract COVID-19? What are the complications that presents?
That's a good question, Macca, yeah. Because I thought the rule was that if you were immunocompromised, you were certainly going to be at greater risk.
Yeah.
And if somebody is undergoing treatment for HIV, are they immunocompromised?
So, yeah, look, I'm planning to actually separate the two in the sense of acquiring COVID and then what the complications might be after acquiring, because they're quite obviously two different sort of things for a lot of people with chronic illnesses and so forth. For people with HIV that are on treatment, and by that I mean people who are on HIV treatment and the treatments are working well for them. So those who are on successful treatment, many of our communities would know that once you reach undetectable viral load, people with HIV cannot transmit HIV. So the treatments are so effective that they can't actually transmit the virus once they've reached an undetectable viral load, or U equals U is the sort of term, undetectable equals untransmissible. Generally, that also means that they're not immunocompromised for a for the purposes of, are they more likely to catch flus, colds, things like that, and COVID-19. So if someone's doing with HIV is doing really well on treatment, they're no more and no less likely to catch COVID-19 than anyone else of a similar age, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So, you know, they may have other conditions and other issues, so other health issues, but so there's certainly not an increased chance of acquiring HIV. I mean, sorry, acquiring COVID-19. In terms of if they get COVID-19, it really primarily will come back to the similar scenarios as anyone else. So, for example, we do know that a lot of people with HIV, particularly, well, a lot of us who are ageing with HIV, have a whole range of other comorbidities, you know, that just come along when we get to 50 and 60 and so forth. So in that sense, it's not necessarily HIV that is more likely to cause complications. However, if in any circumstance where someone, you know, gets to stage with an intensive care, then there are extra things, you know, that obviously intensive care has to consider and monitor when they've got HIV.
Thank you for clarifying. Yes. Thank you. I had never thought through those issues before.
No, it's good. I was wondering, Graham, we've seen the development of a vaccine for COVID-19, depending on, you know, the three that are getting the most publicity. You know, this has been an extraordinary development, obviously with varying levels of potential effectiveness. But it brings me to ask the question. We've been able, you know, to develop a vaccine. Not sure how effective it's going to be and how, you know, how it will work for COVID-19, yet we're still a long way away from doing the same for HIV.
Yeah.
So why...
Well, isn't PrEP the same thing, though?
Well, yes.
And PrEP is now moving to... I mean, you know, my understanding is that the latest development
It's a couple of steps. So, Graham, what do you... You know, am I being pessimistic or am I, you know...
Okay, so... No. I've never called you being pessimistic. So, look, a couple of things. I mean, certainly, like, just to Tass's point around PrEP. I mean, PrEP, maybe it's a fantastic, yeah, but it's an ongoing treatment. So it's not a vaccine in the sense of the biomedical term of a vaccine. PrEP is getting better and better, and they're, you know, testing things like, you know, potentially having injectables where you may only have to take injectable, you know, every couple of months or something like that. There's all sorts of, you know, better and better ways in the future that I think PrEP will be able to work. But it is still, you know, it's pre-exposure prophylaxis, so it's still an ongoing treatment and not at all in the context of a vaccine in terms of a biomedical sense. In terms of getting a vaccine for HIV, which really is one of the many, you know, holy grail or whatever I'm going to say that we're trying to achieve. Now, with a vaccine for HIV, first and foremost, I want to say, yes, you know, I'm a doctor, but I'm not that sort of doctor. So I'm not I don't have a biomedical background. But obviously, I work very closely with a lot of people working in that field, and we've got some amazing people here in Victoria who do a lot of that work. The challenge with vaccines for HIV is a couple of things. One is, probably the easiest way is it's a very, very different virus. And the way it sort of changes and mutates and so forth has put very different barriers in its way for us to get to a vaccine. The coronavirus, is my understanding, is they have been able to learn a lot from other, should we say, less problematic but similar viruses, like SARS and so forth, that have actually allowed them to know a fair bit. Now, probably one of the biggest things that was different with coronavirus is, just from my point of view, the incredible level of rapid collaboration and sharing of data and so forth that happened across time with COVID-19. And one of the things that I think we can feel, I suppose, some confidence around, or some good around, is that so many of those collaborations were actually piggybacking on top of collaborations for the HIV vaccine. The kind of relationship between the research institutes, between like the Doherty here in Victoria and Burnett and the institutes over in the UK and United States and so forth. It was just really exciting to see how much collaboration was already happening for the HIV vaccine. That meant a lot of these people already knew each other, already trusted each other, and I think that's had a big contribution to how quickly COVID-19 vaccines have been able to develop.
Cool. Thanks for that, Graham. Graham, just before we move on and finish up, you're actually hosting an event. Could you quickly tell us about that and how can people participate?
Yeah, so each year we've been fortunate to have a great forum on World AIDS Day, and this year it'll be online. So you can go to the Living Positive Victoria's website, has got all the details. So it's a whole day of different sessions that you can either attend all of them or selected ones. The one that I'm particularly involved in is the Living with HIV perspective that we generally would run on the World AIDS Day. So it's a whole panel, including myself, of people living with HIV. And this particular theme this year is living with HIV in a COVID-19 world. So it's really a reflection on some of the opportunities and challenges, some of the lessons that we've learned from HIV that have been useful for COVID, and some of the things from COVID response that may be useful for HIV, particularly in the sense of isolation, supporting people with HIV and so on.
And so how do we get onto that again? So jump onto which website?
Yeah, so Living Positive Victoria, which the website is just Living Positive Victoria as one word,
Googled it, really.
But if you just type in Living Positive Victoria in Google, it'll come straight up.
And the events are 2:30, I believe?
Yeah, so this panel that I'm doing is at 2:40 on 1st of December. And it's certainly open to everyone and all. So all you have to do is go to the website, register, you'll get the Zoom link, and you'll be able to participate and listen to the panellists. It's myself, Richie Keane from Living Positive Victoria, Heather Ellis from Positive Women, and Dean Beck, who's a well-known personality and an enough ambassador.
So and has been a member of the Joy community as well.
Yeah, and an ambassador for Living Positive for a long
time. It certainly
is.
Thank you very much, Graham. And just one final comment, Graham. I'm very sad to see or to learn that you've left Victoria and are now living in New South Wales. Very disappointed.
I'm actually still living in Victoria.
Oh, are you?
Yes, I'm working for the University of New South Wales. I've moved on from Arches, which some of you, a research centre that many of your listeners will know about, at La Trobe. So I've moved to a position at University of New South Wales that we're researching social impact. But because it's a whole new world, I'm actually going to be doing that job mostly from Victoria.
Great. Fantastic.
So he hasn't been gladdest.
No.
Thank you very much, Graham. We need to go. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.